Are you familiar with the term best practices or best in practice? Anybody? Sure? Yes? What is it then, Wayne? You're the only one who answered me.
So we try to learn from others and the types of things that they do well in our own pursuit of improvement.
Yes, it's one of those office-y kind of words that are annoying, but it's a good point. It's you find someone who's winning in something, and you do what they're doing in that same subject. So it's a good principle for a whole lot of different fields. For example, if you've got like some weird health problem, like let's pretend you've got like a rash on your hand or something, you don't go to some random person on the street and say, "Could you diagnose this for me?" You go to a doctor, right? Because theoretically, they're better practices than the person who'll just be the random guy who has no medical training. Other examples, you don't find some kid who's never seen underneath the car, the hood of a car, and you say, "You know, I've got this noise in my engine. Could you tell me what the problem with that is?" Like, you want to go to a mechanic who has years of experience. You don't want to go to some person who has no idea what they're doing, right? It's basically finding someone who knows what they're doing is the idea of this best practices thing. A personal example that I've warned some people about that it's one thing I think is important. If you decide you want to study Taekwondo or just martial arts in general, and the person teaches Taekwondo, you don't want to go to a place that has karate on their sign. Now that there's actually several schools out there like that. But you want to make sure not only that, if you're going to go study martial arts, you want someone to, you know, actually have a high rank and not just be like some guy who watched a video online about how to teach martial arts, right? You want to make sure they actually know what they're talking about. Students, you came to the University of Missouri Science Technology because you're assuming that the teachers there know what they're talking about, right? Like, I don't. We got a couple of professors. Is that a safe assumption on some subjects? Maybe they're humble, but yeah, you don't go to a college to sit under a professor if you think that they don't know what they're talking about. You go because you want to go learn from experts. Now, maybe not all of the professors might be an expert. I don't know, but there's at least one there you want to go study under, right? And hear from and learn from. If you're going to follow someone, if you're going to sit underneath someone else's learning, if you want to go figure out what you're supposed to do, you want to find someone who knows what they're talking about, who has the right level of knowledge, right? You don't want to go to somebody who doesn't have a clue what's going on. Speaking of knowledge and what's in a leader's mind, what they're thinking about, we are in a new sermon series. Today's the first one of this series, and it's called When God Remembers, is the name of this series. Did you know there are only about less than 30 times in the Bible where God says he remembers something? It's a uncommon-ish thing when God says that he remembers something. Now, this doesn't mean that God doesn't know other things. All because you remember something doesn't mean that, oh, I forgot about that, I remember it now. But it does mean that he brings to light certain things. Before going any further, it's not a trick question. What does to remember mean? To remember, good.
To recall something from the past.
To recall something from the past. Are you satisfied with that answer? Bring something to the forefront. Yeah, the dictionary's definition is to have in or be able to bring one's mind an awareness of. There's a whole lot of prepositions in that sentence. But to bring to the forefront, to have an awareness of a particular subject, it doesn't necessarily have to be the past. It can be something that's going on. But if you're bringing it to the front of your mind and making sure you're concentrating on that, that's remembering something. There are things that I know that are not in the forefront of my thoughts because I'm not remembering them at my time. It's not that I don't know the thing. It's just that the knowledge is just sorted differently. It's in my head. It's just not at the front of my head, maybe. Something might take me back to that thought. We all understand remembering something, at least the concept. Maybe you had a hard time defining it, but we all know what remembering something is, right? At least I hope. That's what souvenirs are for. I looked at my souvenir shelf. I've got a couple, everybody's got like a box somewhere of stuff they like to remember or a shelf. And to get a good visual reminder, I looked at my shelf and I saw this and I was like, I forgot I even did that. So this is my souvenir for a play I directed called The Apple. You may not be able to see it, but inside there's a little like holographic apple thing. And so I found these at the dollar store and I gave them to all my cast members when I directed that play. And I forgot entirely that I did that. But when I saw my souvenir shelf, I was like, oh yeah. And I started remembering details about it and the friends that I had during that time and things such as that. we keep souvenirs from things that we don't want to forget. It's like you get a souvenir from a vacation because pretty soon you'll have to go back to the real world and you don't want to forget the fun of the vacation. And granted, memory and knowledge, they're probably a whole lot different for God. At least I know they're a lot different for God than they are for us. But maybe you could say there are things that perhaps God has souvenirs for that he will not forget. And he will remember those things. In the Bible, there are five different categories of things. All the times God says he remembers something, or all the examples where someone is remembered because they're this type of thing, or the situation's going on, all of the examples can fit into five different categories. And each one will be a different sermon in the sermon series, except for one of the sermons will be two of the categories grouped together, because it kind of gets depressing if you're only talking about the one. But it's all the different things, and we'll handle those that way. And so in the sermon series, we'll look at the times when God remembers something, and there's often a biblical example of someone who's remembered for that reason. But before moving on to those various things, I want to talk about why that's a big deal. Why it actually matters when God says he remembers something. I want to kind of lay the foundation. And so step one, I just want to talk about how God knows everything. Because it's not that big of a deal when I remember something. Sometimes it is a really big deal if I remember something because I've got a really crazy, weird memory. I forget so many important things. But I think it's kind of a huge deal when God, who knows everything, says he remembers something. If your knowledge is infinite and you have one thing in the front of your mind, that's kind of important then, isn't it? If there's something that you've stated you will remember, then it should be important. So I want to bring home that realization today that when God says he remembers something, it is a big deal. We want to talk about what God knows so we can realize that when God remembers, it's important. So today's sermon will be a bit of a theology lesson. So he here loves theology lessons. I saw two hands up. Good job. But no, I know we all love theology. Theology sometimes gets a bad rap, a bad connotation, because there are some people who use theology really poorly, for example, out there. There are some people who make theology really boring. But in Mere Christianity, C.S. Lewis has a good little write-up on why it's okay to like theology. It's like two pages out of his whole book. It's really good, though. But he quotes people saying things like, just teach me that practical religion, not that useless head knowledge stuff. That's sort of the bad rap that theology sometimes gets. It's not the practical stuff. Teach me to actually, like, bring me to God. Don't teach me, like, weird words and funny phrases. But that's the rap it gets. But Lewis goes on to explain why theology can be good. It's like a map. So, like, you can experience an ocean on your own, but if you want to actually go out and voyage into the depths of the ocean, you should probably bring a map. And the map is based off of other people's experience and knowledge and what we know about the ocean. And that's like theology. Theology is like the map. You can have a map without ever having seen the ocean, which is why you can have theologians who use it badly because they've never actually met God. But a map can be really handy if you want to go out and voyage in the depths of who God is, because he is vast and amazing. And so sometimes the theology helps, and that's why theological studies are okay. And so we're going to do a specific type of theological study today called systematic theology. Anybody know what that is? Systematic theology is when you take a specific topic, look at every single verse in the Bible that deals with that specific topic, so you can come up with, this is what the Bible teaches about that specific topic. It can be abused just like any type of study can be abused, but it can be good too. And we're going to look at what is called God's omniscience. Does anyone know what omniscience is? Craig knows. What is it?
All-knowing.
All-knowing. Comes from two words, omni, meaning all, and science, meaning collective of knowledge. So, omniscience. God has all collections of knowledge that exist. God knows everything. That's omniscience, or you could say omniscient is the adjective there. God is omniscient. Where's the noun? I don't know. It'll take too much thinking right now. But let's unpack God knowing everything so that we can appreciate when he remembers one thing and look at all the different verses. So we're doing what's called systematic theology. So I'm going to do a whole lot of verses. I'm not going to ask you to turn your Bibles to all of them, but if there's one that sticks out to you, turn your Bibles to look at that one. Take down notes if you'd like to. Most of the verses will be on the screen, but I'm going to kind of fly through a lot of them. And so if you're someone who likes to see the context and everything like that, pick one and look at that one. But if you'd like to see a list of verses, come find me afterwards and I'll just give you the list. But I'm going to we're going to go at a brisk pace through some of these things. And so I'm going to start with one of the favorite psalms, I think. That's one of my favorites, and I think it's a favorite one, too, amongst just general the general population. That's Psalm 139 is where we are. So I'll begin by reading out of that. It says, O Lord, you have searched me and known me. You know when I sit and when I rise up. You discern my thoughts from afar. You search out my path and my lying down and are acquainted with all my ways. Even before a word is on my tongue, behold, O Lord, you know it altogether. You hem me in behind and before and lay your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high. I cannot attain it. That's a popular and well-loved psalm. Have you heard this psalm before, some of you? Maybe not everybody, but it's one of the more frequently cited ones. There's more verses to it, but in this beginning chunk of verses, did you catch what the psalmist says about God's knowledge? It's that God knows everything about me. So the psalmist is writing, is God, there's nothing hidden from God about me. He knows when I sit and when I rise. And he says, when I sit and when I rise, that's called a merism, which it's a poetical term for like from sea to shining sea. When you say from sea to shining sea, you don't mean just the seas, do you? You mean everything between it when you say that. And so when I sit and when I rise, everything that goes on, when I'm either up or down, doesn't matter. God knows about all of it. God knows my thoughts. He knows what I'm going to say even before I say it, it says in that psalm. And the stanzas ended with, this knowledge is too wonderful for me. And that last line makes a lot of sense. It just basically, the line is, I don't get it. God, you're beyond me. I don't get how powerful your knowledge is. It's true. If God knows everything and he does that, the more you think about it, the more it blows our minds. And so let's think about it as best we can, because it's not just a one-time note in the Bible. It's throughout the whole Bible, too. Acts chapter 1, when the apostles, they're praying for who should replace Judas, they're asking God to figure out who should replace Judas, that bad apostle, because they know God knows everyone's hearts. And so they say, Lord, you know the hearts of all. So they know God knows what's going on inside people's hearts. When the temple is being dedicated, King Solomon, they're finishing the temple, they're doing a prayer of dedication, and Solomon says, God, render to each heart you know according to his ways. So he's saying, God, you know everybody's heart, pay them what is necessary, do to them what is necessary. Hebrews chapter 4 says, and no creature is hidden from his sight, but all are naked and exposed to the eyes of him we must give account. So nothing is hidden from God. Everything is exposed. There's nothing that you can hide. Jesus tells us in Matthew chapter 6, your Father knows what you need before you ask him. He's talking about prayer in particular, that God knows what you're going to ask about before you even stop to ask about it. And so these verses show us God knows everything going in our hearts. He knows what's going on in our thoughts. But it goes beyond more than just what humans can think. God's knowledge goes beyond that too. Matthew chapter 10, famous teaching of Jesus that tells us not to be worried when persecutions come because we're following after God. But in that teaching, he reveals a little bit of truth about God's knowledge. Verse 29, it says, are not two sparrows sold for a penny? And not one of them will fall to the ground apart from your Father. So at least sparrows, God knows every time they do something. Every time a little birdie moves around, God knows what's happening. I assume that goes beyond just birds and goes to the whole animal kingdom. When a lion's eating a sheep or a lamb, as Alan brought up for us, God knows those things are happening. He knows the whole animal kingdom too. But then Jesus goes on and says, but even the hairs of your head are all numbered. So God knows how many hairs are in our head. And it's not that God has to stop to count them and that he can count them when he feels like it. He doesn't even need to stop to count them. He knows them. They are numbered. He already knows the total count of how many hairs are on our head. And this goes further than just knowledge of details in the present, too. So like God knows the details of animals and our minute details about us. He knows what's going on in our hearts and our thoughts. He knows what we're going to say before we say it. It goes beyond just the present, what's going on. It goes to the future as well. God knows the past and the future, too. Through Isaiah the prophet, Isaiah was quoting God, and we get this in chapter 42. God says, I am Yahweh. That is my name. My glory I give to no other, not my praise to carved idols. Behold, the former things have come to pass, and new things I now declare. Before they spring forth, I tell you of them. So God's saying, I am God. I know the future. That's basically the summary of those verses. God knows what will happen before those things spring forth. A few chapters later, again from Isaiah the prophet, God's speaking, for I am God and there is no other. I am God and there is none like me, declaring the end from the beginning and from ancient times, things not yet done. So God knows all things not yet done as well. And what's cool about God's knowledge, though, is we see hints in the scripture that God doesn't just know all the details of the present, and he doesn't just know all the details of the past and all the details of the future. He also, in some verses, we get the realization that God knows what could happen that didn't happen, too. He knows all the possibilities of what can happen as well. 1 Samuel chapter 23, David is about to go into battle. He's about to march against these guys, and God describes how the battle will go. And then something happens, and David doesn't go to battle. But God was still able to, even though the battle didn't happen, say, this is how it would have happened had you gone into battle. And I think that's a pretty cool thing. We get this other, when passages have those phrases like would have happened, we see this. 2 Kings chapter 13, Elisha the prophet tells this king to hit the ground. The king hits the ground kind of haphazardly, and Elisha goes, yeah, I told you to hit the ground. You should have really hit it, because if you would have, then God would have really hit your enemies, and they would have been smited. Since you just sort of hit it and didn't really follow my directions, they're not actually going to be. If you would have done this, then this would have happened, but you didn't. God knew the potential future, even if it wasn't the realized future. In the Gospels, this works not just the future, but it works in the past, too. The potential past alternatives that could have happened. Jesus refers to Sodom in Matthew chapter 11, and he says even they would have repented if they would have seen as many miracles as Jesus was doing. And yet these other towns aren't. And so Jesus references that, saying that's a potential future that could have happened had things gone differently. Just realize how cool of a vast amount of knowledge that is, to know all the various alternatives of what could have happened. Not just what did happen, but what could have possibly have happened. That's pretty amazing, I think. And that goes in the future, too. He knows the things that could happen that we're going to do. He knows what's going to happen, but he also knows the alternatives that could have happened. So God knows our thoughts. He knows our whereabouts. He knows our hearts. He knows the details about our lives. He knows the details about the animal kingdom, the details of the past, the details about the future, the details about the potential that never was and or will be, and I think it's safe to assume he knows a whole lot more, right? He knows everything. It's summarized in a couple of other verses. Job, for example. Job's the book you got to be careful in, getting your theology from it, because Job's three friends don't know a whole lot about God, and they claim to, and they say a lot about him. But then Job's fourth friend shows up, who's a whole lot smarter than the other friend, and he says in chapter 37, "Do you know the balancings of the clouds, the wondrous works of him who is perfect in knowledge?" And that's in the middle of a description about how, Job, do you really know what you're talking about when you're talking about God? And one of the things that's listed is God is perfect in knowledge. 1 John chapter 3, whenever our heart condemns us, God is greater than our heart, and he knows everything. And that's an encouraging verse, actually, that God knows everything, and so he knows exactly what's going on in your heart. And so don't worry about when your heart condemns you. God knows everything. God is perfect in knowledge. He knows everything. Now, if God knows everything, do you realize just how much information that is? Like, so the only way then there that God could exist, like, we don't realize how much information it is, but can you start to imagine how much information that is? The only way for God to be realistic then is not just that he has an infinite knowledge, a vast amount of knowledge, but he also a vast, amazing, infinite amount of intelligence to be able to handle all of that information at once. So it's cool that not only is God really smart, he's the quickest thinker ever, because that's the only way this works. The sheer volume of data going through God's mind in any given moment is just amazing. And there's just that much data there. So we realize his mind is beyond ours, which makes us think of going back to Isaiah the prophet again, Isaiah 55, where God says, "My thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, declares the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts." And that verse makes complete sense when we're talking about how much God knows, that God just knows that much. to try and make sense of how God knows everything. Some of the biblical authors have used personification or sort of metaphors to talk about what's going on. So like 2 Chronicles 16:9, it says, "For the eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth." 1 Corinthians 2:10 says, "For the Spirit searches everything, even the depths of God." Job 28, again going back to Job, it says, "For he looks to the ends of the earth and sees everything under the heavens." And so we get this picture kind of a God who's constantly searching out the earth. He's constantly looking back and forth. But we know those are just terms that we can understand. God knows all of it already. He doesn't have to spend time looking. He just knows. Because if he knows the future, why would he have to spend time looking? And so that's just ways to help get our heads around it and grasp that if it helps you think about it, think of God just always looking at everything, is what it says there. Another verse that we don't couple often with the idea of God's knowledge is in 1 John chapter 1. We heard it read already today by Daniel, but I think it helps us, I think it helps give a little bit more clarity to this mind-blowing greatness of how God's mind is and how much he knows. In 1 John chapter 1, verse 5, it says, "This is the message we have heard from him and proclaim to you, that God is light, and in him is no darkness at all." Now, at least for me, I don't know about you, but at least for me, when I usually read this verse, I think of, oh, God is light. God's perfect. There's nothing wrong with him. He's righteous and holy. That's what I think of usually when I think of this. But if you think about it, this is also, I mean, it is about morality, but it's also about God's knowledge, too. He is never in the dark. And that phrase, in the dark, means you don't know something. He's never in the dark. He always knows what's going on. He has full awareness of it, because in him, there's no darkness on any subject ever. And that makes sense in context because the very next verse is about, or not very next verse, but a couple verses down, is about knowledge. If we claim to have no sin, the truth is not in us, and God knows we're a liar. That's what the next verse is about, is God knows everything. You can't claim to be without sin because in him there is no darkness. You can't fool him. You're a liar if you try to fool him. That's what it says there. In him there is no darkness. There's nothing dark ever in his mind. It's always bright. Everything, he's fully aware. And just isn't that, I think it's amazing. I hope you think that's amazing too, that God just has full awareness, constantly full clarity of everything. He never has to stop and think about anything because he's always aware of everything going on. That's the intelligence of God is just astounding. Just how smart he has to be to handle all of that. And so it leads me to a few questions then. Do you think if God knows all things in your mind that he knows you pretty well? Yeah, I think he knows you pretty well. Probably knows you better than you know yourself because, you know, I know for myself there are sins I've committed that I don't even remember, and I probably never will remember them. Like, there are things about me, there are details about my past that are just gone from my mind, and I don't know about hypnosis, but that's probably the only way anything could ever be hinted at, some of the details that I've just forgotten. And God doesn't forget about those details. He knows me better than I could ever know myself, even. And do you think if God knows all of the details about who you are, and he also knows the future, do you think he knows your potential pretty well? He knows how cool of a person, the maximum amount of coolness you could ever become. Coolness is probably not the right word. Maximum amount of potential greatness you could ever become if you did everything his way from here on out. And you think he knows all things possible, he could have a pretty amazing future planned out for you. That maybe you should just listen to what he says. Sometimes even if it doesn't sound like the greatest thing, but if he really is infinitely smart and infinitely intelligent, knows every single possibility that could ever happen, maybe you should just listen to him and just go along with what he says sometimes. But here's the kicker question, though. If God knows every single thing about us, he even knows the bad things we've done that we've forgotten about, and he still loves us, that's pretty cool, too. He knows the dark thoughts and intentions behind some of the things I do, even when I don't realize them. And he still loves me and wants to adopt me as a son. In fact, as a Christian, I know I am adopted as a son into his family. And he never wants to kick me out, because he still loves me just the same. And it brings us to one of the things that God can't do, actually. The question about whether or not God cannot do things is funny and hard to think about and weird to wrap your head around. Like, can God make a rock so big he can't lift it? My answer is always yes, but then he could also just decide he could lift it. So it's whatever limits he wants to set. And one of the cool things he's done to himself is he cannot love us less. That's one of the cool things that we can think about. God can't do. God can't love us less than he does. That's pretty impressive, even when he can't know us any less than he does right now. He knows us fully and loves us fully at the same time. And I think that's as good as any time to transition into the question of, okay, we learned some theology, so now what? What do we do with it? And I asked the same question earlier. If God, who knows everything, stops and says he remembers something specific, isn't that kind of a big deal? I think so. And so pay attention, be here. That means in the coming weeks as we go through these things that God says he remembers, as God with an infinite knowledge, infinite intelligence, knows everything there is and says there's something he's keeping in the front of his thoughts, then that's a big deal. Be here as we cover those topics. But that's the so what for weeks to come. What's the so what for this week? And I think it's that realize he's the best in practice. He's got the best practices. He's got the right knowledge. He's the only one with all the expert knowledge that there is. He's the one who's worth sitting under and following, realizing that he's worth going for. He's the most holy. He's the only true thing to be reverend and revered. He's worth your time and respect. In fact, he's worth your devotion. He's worth your love. Speaking on expert knowledge, there's a good story. It's sort of a legend story because it's just such a perfect illustration kind of story for sermons that, like, Snopes says it's wrong. I don't trust Snopes all the time, though. But Smithsonian Magazine published the story, so in this case, I'll go with them. But it's still sort of a legend that who knows if all the exact details are true, but I think they mostly are. Henry Ford, we know that guy, right? Henry Ford's the guy who made it possible for individuals to own cars, really. He's the one who lowered the price drastically for a car. He had a generator in his factory, and this is a long time ago. And so if your generator goes out, your factory is not going to work. And he had this big generator in his factory. No one knew why the generator wasn't working, though. It just wasn't going. They called their maintenance men in, facility people in, and finally they call on this guy named Charlie Steinmetz. Has anyone heard his name before? I was hoping some people might know him. Nope, we've got one who knows his name. Apparently he came up with phaser theory. Does anyone know what that is? Is it? Not phasers as in like laser phasers, but yeah, so some of the smart people in the room are nodding their heads. That's good. Or at least pretending to go along with what I'm saying. But it apparently allows for really complicated equations to happen much more simply with this theory. He also was the inventor of a host of other electrical and mathematical advances, so he was kind of like an electrical engineer, and he did a whole bunch of things, and he gets called in because he was known to be the expert in electrical stuff, and the generator probably cost so much they didn't want to build another one again, I don't know, but apparently he tinkered around, just poked at it, looked at it for a couple hours, he read a book on the generator, then got on a ladder and put a chalk mark on the generator, got down, told the maintenance men, pull back the panel from where the chalk mark is and redo the rivets there, and then you'll be fine. They did that, and it worked perfectly. So the generator is fixed, and he sends a bill to Henry Ford for $10,000. $10,000 sounds like a lot today. Do you know how much it is in today's dollars, though? In today's dollars, it's $235,544. Now, if you call an electrician in, are you expecting to pay a bill that high? Sometimes we might get a bill that high, but you don't want a bill that high. And so Henry Ford complained, sent a letter back to him. He sent a letter back with an invoice and actually itemized out his expenses. And apparently the reply was, for making a chalk mark $1, for knowing where to mark the chalk $9,999. His expert knowledge of the machine and how these things worked is what allowed him to fix the problem. And supposedly Ford paid the bill. I think it's interesting, but it goes to show that it's the expert knowledge. When someone actually knows what they're talking about, it's worth their time and paying the bill and doing what they say. All it took was the right knowledge to bring the machine back to life. And you know who's the best in practice, best knowledge, right knowledge, most expert knowledge, one there is worth every penny of handing over your soul and putting in their hands is? It's Jesus. And so if you want to find an expert, find Jesus, because he is the expert. He's the one with all the right answers. He's the master to listen to and study underneath. He knows the best in practice methods. You go to Jesus, who is God himself. He's the only way to the Father. And I want you to love him and take him at his word. Do what he says. Because there might be a whole lot of generators in our lives that are failing. And he's saying, here's the answer. And just do what he says. He knows about you, and yet he still loves you. And so he's worth pursuing. He's worth listening to. Love him back. Let's pray. God, we thank you that you are a God who has so vast of knowledge and information, so much beyond our capability of knowing even what you're talking about. And yet you talk to us, and you love us, and you care for us.